WHPC HD Garden City. Available on your smart speaker.
Play WHPC.
The voice of Nassau Community College. 90.3 WHPC.
I know it's cold again, but I hope you're warm and comfortable wherever you are. It's Friday, and it's 5 p.m., so that's good news. Hope you can appreciate that. Time for American Radio on 90.3 WHPC. I'm Tom Ryan with you for the next hour, if you'll have me. We'll have a wife and co-host, Teddy Morales Ryan, here as well, running the board, taking care of things, all the technical stuff. If you've been listening regularly, you know that... Well, of course, we call the show How Music Changed on Fridays when we get really deep into specific topics. And we've been covering the anthology of American folk music now for 6 weeks. Today is episode 7. I know there's going to be exactly 12 episodes for this series. And the series itself is, well, it is, as it's titled, An Anthology of American Folk Music. I consider it to be perhaps the most important album collection ever made because it was put together by one man who had the foresight to recognize that by doing so, it might eventually influence how music would develop over time in America. And it actually did serve that purpose. Eventually, it was released in 1952, and most of the songs from the album were recorded in the late 20s, maybe 1930. So they were already very, very old, about at least, say, 25 years old when he released the album. Now they're 100 years old almost, which is just almost beyond remarkable. And yet you can feel the relevance of the songs. And of course, I'm here to try to explain that as best as I can without getting in the way of the music. But I do think that because we're playing something which is that old, it really does need some explaining at times, because I think the most people don't necessarily automatically tune in to music which is this old. So as an introduction today, I would like to let Harry Smith, the compiler and editor of this series, explain the purpose of this entire series in a short phrase that he did. I'm even going to have the nerve to interrupt him from time to time to add my own explanation for what he's saying, because sometimes when you read what somebody else is saying, your brain just goes numb. You know, you don't really even listen to it, kind of. So I'll bump in every now and then and add my own thoughts. So these are Harry's words. Only through recordings is it possible to learn of those developments that have been so characteristic of American music, but which are unknowable through written transcription alone. And what he's saying there is, of course, well, maybe not of course, is that up until the point where before records were being made, there were people like the Child Ballads, and people were compiling books of songs where they would write down the words, maybe even some of the melody, but it didn't convey really at all much of how the song was being performed by the artist. And Harry Smith was obsessed with the fact that so many different types of music were brought to America and altered when they came to America. And it happened at right about the same time as the 78 RPM record became popular. And that's why he is saying that it was through the recordings that these developments were becoming knowable. So then he says, back to his quote, then too, records of the type found in the present set, meaning this box set, played a large part in stimulating these historic changes by making easily available to each other the rhythmically and verbally specialized music of groups living in mutual social and cultural isolation. So what he's really saying is, what I did was I listened to about 5,000 or 6,000 songs, compiled my what I considered to be about the best, I think it's about 80, I could tell you the exact number. It's 84 songs for the first three albums. And I put them together in a way that there's crosstalk between them, that there's a way that you can relate from one song to another. And although the people performing them were more or less functioning in quote-unquote isolation, there was a development happening in the United States that actually started the whole idea of how American popular music developed, whether you can talking about country music, the blues, eventually rock and roll music. These are the roots of all of that. So there it is in a nutshell. This compendium of songs is no less than a key to understanding the roots of American music culture. So we've played our way through, like Harry divided it up into thirds. He had three different sections of books, I guess, that he had, because he three different double albums is how it came out. The first album was called Ballads, and we covered that. That took three shows. The second double album was called Social Music. That was the one with those, maybe the most difficult for some people, because that included, I guess, you know, a lot of Cajun music and instrumental stuff, and also like religious or church music, anything that involved people gathering or dance stuff. So that was the second set. And today we're going to start with the third double album, which was simply called Songs. And his idea of songs is mostly songs that people brought with them from Europe and that were eventually transcribed and changed into something that either resembles very closely what it originally was from usually Europe, or changed very drastically from what it originally was when it came from Europe. The first song, the first artist anyway, is Clarence Tom Ashley. And he was one of the very first people that we covered in our very first show in this series. It was song number three by Clarence Ashley in the very first show. He performed The House Carpenter. In this instance, we'll let him kick off the show with a song called The Cuckoo Bird.
Gonna build me a log cabin on a mountain so high so I can see Willie. Fly, she never hollers cuckoo till the 4th of July. I've played cards in England, I've played cards in Spain. I'll bet you $10 I beat you next game. pocket, all my silver and my gold.
Was recorded on November 23rd of 1929, 97 years ago.
That was a high caliber recording.
For a 97-year-old song?
Yeah.
Right. I would agree. Now, that was something else that Harry Smith had decided. He didn't want to, he eliminated a lot of the songs that predated the use of like the electronic microphone because the quality was just so poor that he just didn't think that it was worthwhile. So he eliminated songs, I'd say, like that would be before 1925. And he, for quality reasons. And I don't know what that, you know, what that eliminated, but I all I can say is that what he did is pretty stupendous as it is. And I want to read something here that was written about Harry Smith by... Actually, it was from it's an excerpt from an interview with Allen Ginsberg, the man who wrote Howl, one of the most famous poems by an American, by any American, I think, contemporary American for sure. About him talking about Harry Smith and his life, because you might get an interest, an idea of just how eccentric this person was. And this is Allen Ginsberg speaking. Harry Smith's field was visual art as well as ethnomusicology. One day he had no money, and he offered to sell me a rather dark version of this film called Heaven and Earth Magic for $100. Every time we'd go up there, he'd get me high, and then he'd ask me for money because he was starving. And apparently, he went around and did that with everybody. He had no source, but he was a genius, like the painter Albert Pinkham Ryder. So I got to be scared of going up there because he'd get me tremblingly high on grass and he'd show me these amazing movies and I'd be totally awed by the universality of his genius in music and painting. In addition, he could write mad, long, long poems, rhymed. But he always hit me up for money if he could capture me and get me up there and hypnotize me with his films. In 1965... he recorded the first Fugs album. It's pretty cool. I just saw that album this past weekend. Meant to buy it, and I didn't, but I'm going to go back. But anyway, he did it on his own, and then he gave it to ESP Records, who released it. Maybe he gave it to Folkways first. Anyway, Moses Ash had constantly supplied him with money. If Harry wasn't near someone else, he always hit up Mo Ash, who dreaded his coming. Or Harry said he dreaded his coming. Ash was the guy who invented and subsidized and managed Folkways Records. Now, he goes on to talk about Harry's life when he was living in the Chelsea Hotel and how he eventually got kicked out of the Chelsea Hotel at various times because he was literally destitute and was, you know, moving about the city. And then he sums it up. This is the last paragraph. He says, the amazing thing was that in that last year in his life, he was awarded a Grammy for the advancement of American folk music. He was dressed up in a tuxedo without a tie, and he stumbled trying to climb on the stage. He was given a moment to make a speech and said very briefly that he was happy to live long enough to see American political culture affected and moved and shaped somewhat by American folk music, meaning the whole rock and roll, Bob Dylan, beatnik, post-beatnik youth culture. It was a beautiful speech because it very briefly said that he'd lived long enough to see the philosophy of the homeless and the Negro and the minorities and the impoverished, of which he was one, starving in the Bowery, alter the consciousness of America sufficiently to affect its politics. That's a lot to be said for one man who just basically put together a bunch of songs. Well, now with what's happening with part three is that a lot of it bears a strong resemblance to what was covered on part one. Like, for example, I mentioned that Clarence Tom Ashley we played him earlier in part one. The same thing with this next track. This is Beale Kazee singing the next track, and he was also the person who sang on the very first set song, show number one in this series, when we played The Butcher's Boy by Beale Kazee. In this case, the track is called East Virginia, recorded on April 20th, 1927. Beale Kazee with singing East Virginia. Some of these songs I've gotten to know so well over the years. This is like one of those albums that I just never let go. And I was looking forward to playing this on the radio show for this series, for the How Music Changed series, knowing that it would be incredibly important. And it's an unusual selection, but I really just hope that everybody's like hanging in and listening to this and picking up on it, because there's so much to love. Now, the next song is a very interesting, like, backstory. It's called Minglewood Blues. Now, if you're a Grateful Dead fan, you might know the new Minglewood Blues or the new Minglewood Blues. I think a lot of people have, like, basically picked up on it. Well, this is where it all started from. This isn't the new Minglewood Blues. It's just the Minglewood Blues. And Minglewood was a lumber camp that was, like, east of the Mississippi River. And it was like a work camp that they would have occasionally entertainment and music on weekends and places where musicians could find work. Noah Lewis, a member of the band, had worked Minglewood, and he's the one who wrote this song. Now, the band is Cannon's Jug Stompers, and they were among the best known of the many jug and skiffle bands around Memphis in the 20s and 30s. Now, the jug band craze started in Louisville, Kentucky, but it had its biggest impact in Memphis. Bands busked on the streets and provided entertainment for dances. This group included Gus Cannon, Ashley Thompson, and Noah Lewis, as I said, the man who wrote the song. Both Cannon and Lewis had been performing professionally since the early years of the century. Cannon developed as a minstrel show performer. His parents were born into slavery, and his first banjo was made from a bread pan and had a raccoon skin head. The harmonica player, Noah Lewis, was perhaps the best showman of the group. Cannon recalled that Lewis could play two harmonicas at once, one with his mouth and one through his nose. Unfortunately, he died from stab wounds in 1937. And Ashley Thompson started playing with them as a teenager and was obviously with the group for their early recordings. What's interesting is in the 1960s, he recorded again for the music scholar Sam Charters in 1956. And in 1963, the folk revival group Rooftop Singers had a number one hit with one of Gus Cannon's songs. The song Walk Right In, you might remember it, was a number one hit. He's the guy who wrote it. And he had to fight them to get some money because they were basically claiming that they wrote it. But he won, and he did. He was able to collect a considerable amount. And he lived out the rest of his life with, as it says here, in far more ease than he had been accustomed to during the lean years. Here is the Cannon Jug Stompers with Noah Lewis performing Minglewood Blues. Thank you.
coming back, baby, not beyond.
That's Gus Cannon, by the way, playing both the banjo and jug simultaneously. I wonder how he was able to do that. I wonder if he had a stand for the jug or something. That seems almost impossible. But he's credited for both. All right, we're going to take a trip down the Mississippi to where it almost the very end. We're going to go to New Orleans, Louisiana for the next couple of songs for an artist named Didier Hebert. A blind Louisiana guitarist. We've spoken a lot about how that was like really pretty much the only thing that you could do if you were a blind man, a blind black man. If you were going to try to like survive in this world, you had to learn to play guitar and busk. Didier Hebert was, you know, one of those people. And in this instance, he was actually an accompanist for an accordion player named Dewey Segura. They recorded. They had actually met at a dance, and he said that let's do a recording session together. So they did, and they recorded four songs. Three of them they recorded as a duo. One song is just with Didier Hebert playing guitar, and that is the song that Harry Smith decided to choose for whatever reason. They did continue to play together after that, but when Segura was started to record later on the next year, Hebert was not with him for one reason or another. So this is a very rare recording then by Didier Hebert. There's not very much more that is known by him. The song is called I Woke Up One Morning in May.
J'aime s'il le vin matin dormait, mais bien beau matin, c'était pour passer mes un beau jour dans ma vie. Quand j'ai trouvé mon père en paix pleurer, ma mère qui pleurait dans ses bras. C'était tôt pour la gorge, mais dans un jeune garçon. Oh, moi, j'aimais beaucoup, beaucoup plus que ma vie. Faites une promesse de savant. Aux hommes des enfants, il m'a quitté d'un abandon. Moi bien malade dans mon lit, et mes enfants la crève de vin. Et mon mari en la table avec un blé. Et moi qui me souhaitais la mort. C'est tous ces jeunes défaits prendre un exemple de moi. Oh, mais t'es pas tout votre amitié. C'est juste des jeunes garçons. Sans accord de temps montré comme notre étoile dans le ciel. Oh, depuis dans l'âge de 14 ans, j'apprends mes idées avec toi. Et dès le jour en jour, mes morts m'en va d'un abandon. Au moins je connais, je m'en va dans ces grands chemins. misérez moi tout seul. Et dire des choses à délaisser, mais que personne n'en veut de moi.
You're listening to WHPC, WHPC HD, Garden City, New York. The show is American at Radio, and Fridays, How Music Changed, and you can see what we do, because we're going to get back to doing it right now. Excuse me. Okay, one more song from New Orleans, and a very different type of music. Of course, there we heard the French Cajun side of the city. Now we're going to hear a song that pretty much is... some consider it to be like one of like almost the birth of the blues in a way on a record from 1927, March 11th of 1927. Actually, it's by a man named Richard Rabbit Brown. The song is called James Alley Blues, which is a misnomer because he was actually born and raised in Jane's Alley, not James Alley. Jane's Alley was a pretty dangerous place, in the early 20th century. They called it the battlefield. And it, like, even the police wouldn't go there when there was trouble. There was no way that anybody was going to, like, get involved in it. There was that, it was considered to be that dangerous. Jane's Alley was the same place where Louis Armstrong was raised. And he ended up getting arrested and ended up, if it wasn't for that, he never would have played trumpet. So that's another story. So Rabbit was singing on the streets, and he was a performer at a nightclub called Mama Lou's, and he was also a singing boatman on Lake Pontchartrain. Now, I love what Harry Smith says about it, or about him. He goes, Richard Brown, one of the earliest musicians to learn the 12-bar blues chord pattern, wow, was the first and most important New Orleans folk singer to record. He recorded 3 10-inch sides and 2 12-inch ones. They were cut in a New Orleans garage the same day that tuba player Joe Howard, another alumnus of the Buddy Bolden Band, recorded with Louis Dumain. Brown was famous for his dramatic guitar playing, which on recordings closely resembles that of Willie Johnson, who was a guitar player who happened to play with Louis Armstrong from time to time, I happen to know. So there you go. Here is Richard Rabbit Brown performing James Alley Blues.
Nothing like it used to be. No time thing now, nothing like it used to be. And I'm telling you all the truth, oh, take it for me. I haven't seen better days, but I'm putting up with these. I haven't seen better days, but I'm putting up with thee. I can have a much better time, but these girls now it's so hard to please. Cause I was born in the country, I needed to rule. Cause I was born in the country, she thinks I'm easy to rule. She tried to hitch me to a wagon, she wanna drive me like a mule. I bought the groceries and I paid the rent. Yeah, I buy the groceries and I paid the rent. They try to make me wash her clothes, but I got good common sense. I said, if you don't want me, why don't you tell me so? If you don't want me, why don't you tell me so? Because it ain't like a man that ain't got nowhere to go. I I'll even give you sugar for sugar, let you get sold for sold. I'll give you sugar for sugar, let you get sold for sold. And if you can't get along with me, well, it's your own fault. How you want me to love you and you treat me mean? How do you want me to love you? You keep a treat me mean. You're my daily thought and my nightly dream. Sometimes I think it's you too sweet to die. Sometimes I think that you're too sweet to die. And another time I think you ought to be buried alive.
I love that record so much. I just think that is one of the best things ever made. That's amazing. Richard Rabbit Brown, James Alley Blues. Jane Alley Blues is what it really is, but there, because he doesn't say it. It's just what it is, because that's where he's from. All right. Another classic. This time it's an artist by the name of Doc Boggs. His real name, Moran Lee Boggs, from Norton, a coal mining town in Virginia. He was a big fan of African-American music, although he was a white man, and his banjo playing has a blues feel to it because of that. He recorded for Brunswick Records, and he was hoping that a music career would help him avoid a life of working in the mines. But he was a miner for most of his life, retiring in 1952. He was rediscovered in the 1960s which happened, you know, with the folk rebirth because of people like Harry Smith. When Harry Smith put this out, there was a folk revival, and a lot of these people were being rediscovered, and they were playing at Newport Folk Festival and things like that. This is why, you know, Mike Seeger did extensive interviews with Doc Boggs in 1963, and this is because people heard of him. Quite simply because Harry Smith had helped to continue his reputation because he was on the Anthology of American Folk Music. It's as simple as that. And it was this song. Here's Doc Boggs with Sugar Baby.
Got no sugar baby now. All I can do for see peace with you, and I can't get along this away. Can't get along this away. All I can do, that's all I can say. I will sing it to your mama next payday. Sing it to your mama next payday. Rocking chair, I've got no honey baby now, got no sugar baby now. The cradle, who sang the song? Who rocked the cradle when I'm gone? Who rocked the cradle when I'm gone? I'll rock the cradle, I'll sing the song. I'll rock the cradle when you're gone. I'll rock the cradle when you're gone. Can do, that's all I can say. I will sing it to your mama next payday. Later in the she give her every dime I made. What more could a poor boy do? What more could a poor boy do?
God no honey baby now. God no sugar baby now. I can see I've done all I can do, and I can't make a living with you, can't make a living with you.
Of course, Doc Bob's Sugar Baby. Now, as again, and we have another artist who is somebody that we covered. I don't know what show it was. I think it might have been in this, maybe about show number five or so. Bascom Lamar Lunsford was the artist. We had we mentioned at the time that he was a country lawyer, banjo player, fiddler. He was like a song collector who traveled around at the Appalachians, finding folk songs and basically a song catcher and recording them. And according to Harry Smith, then the song itself is called, in this instance, "I Wish I Was a Mole in the Ground." So Harry Smith says, "The narrator's wish to be a mole in the ground and a lizard in the spring are quite surrealistic in their symbolism. The bend, which is a pen in some other versions, probably refers to the Big Bend Penitentiary. In an earlier recording of this song, on OK in 1925, the banjo is even more remarkable in its halting rhythms, and the singer decides he would, quote, rather be a lizard. Lunsford, a lawyer of Asheville, North Carolina, writes that this song is, quote, typical product of the Pigeon River Valley. Here's Bascom Lamar Lunsford with "I Wish I Was a Mole in the Ground."
I wish I was a mole in the ground. Yes, I wish I was a mole in the ground. If I was a mole in the ground, I'd root that mountain down, and I wish I was a mole in the ground. Well, Tempe wants a $9 show. Yes, Tempe wants a $9 show. When I come over the hill with a $40 bill, 'tis, baby, where you been so long? I've been in the bend so long. Yes, I've been in the bend so long. I've been in the bend with the rough and rowdy men, 'tis, baby, where you been so long? Oh, I don't like a railroad man. No, I don't like a railroad man. If I was a railroad man, they would kill you when he can, and drink your blood like wine. Oh, I wish I was a lizard in the spring. Yes, I wish I was a lizard in the spring. But a lizard in the spring, I'd hear my darling sing, and I wish I was a lizard in the spring. Oh, Tempe, let your hair roll down. Tempe, let let your hair roll down. Let your hair roll down and your bangs curl around. Oh, can't be let your hair roll down. I wish I was a mole in the ground. Yes, I wish I was a mole in the ground. If I was a mole in the ground, I'd root that mountain down. And I wish I was a mole in the ground.
That's Bascom Lamar Lunsford. I wish I was a mole in the ground. You'll notice I'm talking a lot about things that we've done on earlier shows. I should mention, of course, that if you are interested, if you go to our website, you can pick up all of this history very easily. Just go to American Hit Network, and all of the shows are right there. You can find on the homepage. There's just one click, and it's so easy to navigate. And you can hear anything you want to whenever you want to. Of course, it's all free. And if you are interested in indulging into a little bit of history and picking up on what you may have missed, I highly recommend it, because I don't think you could really get a better education than the one that is offered by Harry Smith. And, you know, we're basically, you know, offering it to you here in free on the radio, and also you can get it that way by hearing it on the website, which is simply AmericanHitNetwork.com, or if you just search for American Hit Radio, it will come right up. So check it out. All right, the next track is 99 years old. It's just hard to believe. Recorded in New York City, on May 12th. 1927. It's by an Ernest Stoneman on harmonica and Hattie Frost Stoneman on guitar. The song is credited as Mr. and Mrs. Ernest V. Stoneman. Now, Ernest Stoneman was born in Carroll County, Virginia. He came from a musical family, grew up learning a lot of their songs. He married Hattie Frost, nay Stoneman, in 1918, and they settled in Bluefield, West Virginia. He worked as a carpenter. By his own account, he heard a recording by a fellow West Virginia singer, Henry Witter, and he thought he could sing better than Witter. So he asked for and received auditions with Columbia and OK Records in New York. Stoneman's repertoire, a popular repertoire, featured songs written to commemorate news events and disasters. And he had very, very popular recordings, such as The Titanic, The Wreck of the C&O. As Stoneman said, any song with a story will go to the people's hearts because they love stories. Now, his groups, he recorded with his wife and sometimes with other musicians as well. In this group with his wife, he would play with Eck Dunford. If you remember, we recorded, again, here I'm going back to what we did in an earlier show, the song Old Shoes and Leggings. This is one of the more fun songs that we had played earlier. I think might have been in the first show as well. The last song of the first show, that was Eck Dunford. Also, people like the Ward Brothers, Oscar Jenkins, all the people that deserve special mention. Stoneman continued to play music into the 40s and 50s. While supplementing his income with other work. Eventually, though, he was recorded by the scholar performer Mike Seeger in 1957 for Folkways Records, thereby exposing them to the folk revival audience. Again, thank you, Harry Smith, for being recognized all those years later, a quarter of a century later. Stoneman also recorded with his family during the 1960s and made numerous television appearances. They were eventually embraced by the mainstream country and Western music audience. And by then, Stoneman had earned the respectful title of Pop Stoneman. Here, then, are Mr. and Mrs. Ernest V. Stoneman. The song is called The Mountaineer's Courtship.
Thank you. Sunday, next Sunday, next Sunday. I expect I'll come next Sunday if the weather is good.
Oh, how long you think you'll court me, you court me, you court me. Oh, how long you think you'll court me, my dear old little boy.
I expect I'll court you all night, all night, all night. I expect I'll court you all night if the weather is good. The buggy, my ox won't work to the buggy, cause I never seen him try.
Oh, who are you gonna bring to the wedding, to the wedding, to the wedding? Oh, who are you gonna bring to the wedding, my dear old little boy?
I expect I'll bring my children, my children, my children. I expect I'll bring my children if the weather is good.
Well, I didn't know you had any children, any children, any children. Well, I didn't know you had any children, my dear old.
Yes, I have six children, six children, six children. Oh, yes, I have six children. Go, Jim, John, Sally, and the baby. Run and tell Aunt Sally, Aunt Sally, Aunt Sally. Oh, run and tell Aunt Sally, the old gray goose is dead. The one that she's been saving, been saving, been saving. The one that she's been saving to make her feather bed.
Song cracks me up. I didn't know you had any children. Oh, yes, I have six children. Which is, well, you know, it was true, but it was true with the two of that they had together quite a number of children. The Stoneman family, as we just heard, originally was just Ernest and his wife Hattie. But by 1928, they started to bring their family into the mix. The cousins Willie and George started to play with them. And the family continued to grow. By 1938, Ernest and Hattie had 11 mouths to feed, on the way to 13. And each child grew up playing an instrument, and they all joined the band. So the group would sometimes have as many as 17 musicians playing with the group. And if you could imagine that, one of them, Ronnie, became a regular on the country music and comedy show Hee Haw. After Pop died in 1968, the group continued to play, but they left his vacant chair on the stage in the position that it had always been in respect to him. So we'll leave you, it's a beautiful thought, with this track by the Stoneman family called The Spanish Merchant's Daughter. I hope you had as much fun as I did with this, and please come back next Friday. We got a whole bunch more songs for you. See you then.
Merchant, and before he went to sea, leave you and refuse to be my bride.
No, sir, no, sir, no, sir, no, sir.
No, sir,
no, sir, no, sir, no, no.
Thanks again. See you next.